Hello, everyone. This is Whitney with the Conferences for Women. Thanks so much for joining us today for our teleclass, How to Spot a Liar with Pamela Meyer. Before I bring Pamela on the line, I want to tell you a little bit about her. She's the founder and CEO of Calibrate, a leading deception detection training company, and a social networking company, Empatico Networks. She holds an MBA from Harvard, an MA in public policy from Claremont Graduate School, and is a certified fraud examiner. She has extensive training in the use of visual clues and psychology to detect deception, and most recently is the author of Lie Spotting. Before we bring Pamela on the line, you may want to pull out a piece of paper and have that in front of you if Pamela is going to be walking you through a few exercises. And, of course, mark your calendars for our September office hours and our August office hours. And if you do not already have a subscription to our newsletters, I encourage you to go to the website and sign up for those as well. So for August, the 27th, is going to be Balance for the Entrepreneurial Mom, Blurring the Lines Between Work and Life with Emma Johnson. That will be our teleclass. And our office hours will be on August 21st, focused on building your financial confidence. For September, the teleclass is the 25th, Master the Art of Making the Instant Connection with Mel Robbins. And our office hours on September 18th, focused on giving you the tools to network with colleagues and with strangers. So that said, I'd like to bring Pamela onto the line for a mini lesson in lie spotting. And if you're on Twitter, please follow along using the hashtag lie spotting. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Hi there. I'm Pamela Meyer, and I'm so happy to be able to talk to you today and to provide this mini lesson on how to tell if someone's lying. Now, I'm the author of the book Lie Spotting, and you may wonder, what is lie spotting? Well, lie spotting is a modern skill of deception detection that's taught in the intelligence and law enforcement worlds. And what I do is I bring this skill to business people and to anyone who wants to get to the truth, whether you're the mother of a teenager, a first-time home buyer, or a single person that's gone on too many bad first dates. Lying permeates our society now, especially with the proliferation of digital platforms for creating false identities. Researchers have studied this systematically, and it turns out we're told anywhere from 25 to 200 lies a day. Now, that's a lot of lies. So what I do is I take the same training that's taught in the law enforcement world and the intelligence world, and I bring it to you and to others who want to get closer to the truth. Now, you may ask yourself, are we born liars? Well, researchers have long known that the more intelligent the species, the more deceptive behavior it will display. You might remember Coco the gorilla. She was that gorilla that was taught sign language. Coco was taught 1,000 words. Well, Coco once blamed her pet kitten for ripping a sink out of the wall. It starts really, really early. We are really hardwired to become leaders of the pack. There's one study, quite famous study in the deception world, where kids were brought into a room and they were asked one by one not to peek at a toy. And as you can imagine, at 3 years old, almost all the kids peeked at the toy. Then they were asked, did you peek? 38% of the three-year-olds confessed the truth. They said, yeah, I peeked. But by the time they were five, when the study was repeated with five-year-olds, 100% of those kids peeked at the toy and 100% of those kids lied about it. So as we grow older, we learn to adapt and we do learn to lie. Now, you may think women probably lie less than men. Well, that actually is not true. We lie in equal numbers. Men tell 8 times more self-oriented lies than women, but women do tend to tell lies in equal numbers more to protect other people. We also know that unmarried people lie about 70% more to their partners than married people. And from the research, we know that good liars tend to be gregarious, strategic thinkers. They're what we call high self-monitors. They manage their own emotions well. They read other people extremely well. Now, You may ask yourself, well, what about all those white lies? What about the fibs? Does that matter? I make it a point to downplay the effects of white lies, like telling your mother-in-law that her new hairdo is gorgeous when it's clearly a hair don't. Don't worry about that at all. That's kind. That's considerate. White lies lubricate society. We're not concerned with those. The guy who says fine when you pass him in the street and say, hey, how are you? When he's actually very, very upset about acrimonious divorce, he lost his job. He's just soldiering on. In fact, he's a bit of a hero because he's not lapsing into some kind of a narcissistic rant. He's soldiering on and he's being polite. I'm concerned with the deception that can actually affect very important decisions that we have to make. Who to hire, who to date, what job to take. Those kinds of questions can really be affected by whether or not you can get closer to the truth. So what we're going to do today is we're going to learn a 5-step method on how to get to the truth. It's called the basic method. So write down on a piece of paper the word basic, the letters B-A-S-I-C. And we're going to start with baselining. That's the B. That's the first step in the basic method. Now, when you baseline someone, you're trying to get a normal reaction out of them. You're asking them a bunch of normal questions. How are you? How was your weekend? How are the kids? How was your vacation? What are you up to? Why do you baseline someone? Why do you have a normal conversation to get someone's baseline at the beginning of a lie spotting interview? Well, what you're doing is you're getting a reliable reference point for measuring those changes later when they might be deceptive. So when you baseline someone, you interact under normal circumstances, but you pay very close attention to what you see and what you hear. You want to look and listen very, very carefully. And by the way, even if you don't suspect someone of deception, it's just good practice to start observing carefully. You're looking at someone's eye movements when you're baselining them. How much direct gaze do they give you versus looking away? You want to get to know what their norm is. What is their posture like? What are their hand gestures, their leg gestures like? Most importantly, you want to take note of the tone, the speed, the volume, the cadence of their speech. Vocal tone really can shift when someone's being deceptive. And you also want to look at the style and the duration of their laugh. Go home, see if you can actually describe to your closest colleague or to your partner what someone at work's laugh sounds like. Oftentimes, we think we know people well, but when we're asked to articulate what they sound like, what their laugh sounds like, what their posture is like, we actually find that we haven't looked and listened quite as closely as we thought we had. So the first step in the 5-step method for getting to the truth is baselining. And the B in basic stands for baselining. Remember, you're just talking to someone for a few minutes at the beginning of a conversation, trying to get a reliable reference point for measuring those changes later. Now, the A in basic, the second step, stands for asking open-ended questions. The goal here is to obtain an unlimited amount of information through expanded verbal replies on the part of the person across the table from you. You want to avoid simple yes and no questions. You don't want to say, what budget did you decide on at the budget retreat? You want to say instead, hey, how was the retreat? So you want to ask someone open-ended questions. Why are you doing that? Well, first of all, you need to establish what you know and then what it is you need to know. So you need to elicit as much information as you can from someone. The other reason you're doing that is you want to develop rapport. So you want to listen actively and you want to find common ground. When you baseline someone, you also want to be sure that the setting is comfortable. You want to be free from distraction, and you want to be in a quiet place because you're entering into a conversation where you need to look and listen very carefully. So you baseline them. You're asking them open questions. You're trying to get an observable response. You're trying to develop as much rapport as you can. A typical lie-spotting interrogation is nothing like that Law and Order television show where you kind of pummel someone into submission. Where were you on the night of August 10th? No. That's not at all what a lie-spotting interview is like. A lie-spotting conversation, interview, interrogation is boring. It goes on for a long time. You're having a normal conversation with someone, but you are observing the responses on the part of your participant very, very carefully. So the B in basic stands for baselining. where you're trying to get a reliable reference point for measuring changes later. The A in basic stands for asking open-ended questions, not those yes-no questions, open-ended questions, where you can get your subject to really just start talking and you can develop rapport. Now, the S in basic, the third step, stands for studying the clusters. This is the meat of your lie spotting interview. This is really where the rubber hits the road. What you're doing when you're asking progressively harder questions is you are going to start to look for verbal and nonverbal indicators of deceit. Two or three verbal indicators, two or three nonverbal indicators might suggest that someone is being deceptive. So you want to very carefully observe your subject's response. Now, when we look at nonverbal clues, body language, what we're looking for, again, is shifts in behavior. Someone's posture may shift significantly right after you ask them a hard question. Many researchers only consider the first few seconds after a hard question is asked to be scientifically reliable. So be careful. You don't want to wait and look at a delayed response, but you do want to see someone's spontaneous response. When you ask them a hard question, nonverbal clues may be things like grooming gestures, dusting lint off your shoulders, twiddling with the hair, rubbing your eyes, touching below the eyes, hand wringing, turning your feet inward, curling them inward, touching barrier objects, as we call them, or other objects on the table, taking a notebook, a glass, an iPhone, some kind of an object, and placing it in between you and the person across from you on the table if you're in a conference room across the table from somebody or if you're at a restaurant. You may see someone slump. You may see them lower their voice. They may be moving those objects just around the table. You may see a shift in that blink rate. And oftentimes you may see clenched fists or closed eyes. But most importantly, what you will see are those anchor point shifts. Someone may significantly shift their posture when they're asked a very, very hard question, or when they think all the hard questions are over. You may see what we call post-interview relief, that exhale, the slump, when they think all the hard questions are over. Now let's move on to the verbal clues to deceit. We're pretty familiar with body language, but let's take, for example, some of the verbal clues that were in President Clinton's response when he said, "I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky." There were three or four pretty good clues to deception there. First of all, we heard a non-contracted denial. He said did not versus didn't, could not versus couldn't. These non-contracted denials are associated with deception. We know that when someone is overdetermined in their denial, they will resort to formal rather than informal language. Now, we also heard distancing language, that woman, Miss Lewinsky. Liars will often unconsciously distance themselves from their subject using language as their choice or as a tool to do that. We also heard a very specific denial, Miss Lewinsky. Honest person is going to say, "Hey, I never had sex outside my marriage in my life." A dishonest person is going to say, "I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky." The honest person may very well issue a categorical denial. Dishonest people tend to narrow the field of their denial quite substantially. You may also hear qualifying language, "you know, to tell you the truth, in all honesty." Or you might hear religious references, overemphasizing truthfulness. "I swear to God on my mother's grave I didn't send that email." Interrogators often hear those religious references and consider them to be red flags. So those are the clusters you want to look at, verbal and nonverbal clues. There are many, many more, but for the purposes of just quickly learning the basic method, note that the S in basic stands for studying the clusters, and you're looking here for verbal and nonverbal clusters of deceit, but be careful. If someone's tapping their foot and they're normally a foot tapper, if you baseline them, it doesn't mean anything. That's their norm. Be very, very careful here. Now, the I in the basic method stands for intuiting the gaps. And here's where you really want to use your brain. The goal here is to keep your instincts in mind and identify and fill the holes in on the gaps in someone's story. What kind of holes are there? Are there statement gaps? Is there a gap between what someone says happened and what the facts might indicate happened? Are there logic gaps in their story? How do they say the course of events unfolded, and what's the logic in the way they might have unfolded? Are there behavior gaps? how is this person behaving now, and what was their baseline like? And then finally, and this is really an advanced skill, but you need to start to intuit someone's emotional gaps. What are their words, and are the emotions they're expressing on their face conflicting in some way with their words? We often see this with murderers or someone who tells a horrific story and is lying about it. Their face, when they're telling that horrific, horrible story, will be completely still, devoid of emotion. Yet, the story is horrible, and an honest person oftentimes shows much more emotion on the face. Now, that's BASI, baselining, asking open-ended questions, studying the clusters, the I for intuiting the gaps, and now we're at the final step in our five-step method, the C for confirm. This is very, very important. There are many, many ways to confirm if someone is actually telling the truth. You may have asked those open-ended questions. You may baseline very well. You may very intelligently intuited the gaps in their story, and you may have seen lots of clusters of deception, but still you need to confirm your hunches. The last thing you want to do is wrongly accuse someone of lying. So you need to test your hunches and move towards a conclusion. There are a lot of different ways to do that. We're not going to get into that now because that's really the stuff of very advanced training. But I just want to make the point here that when you're learning how to detect deception, you have to be very, very careful because you really want to make sure that you've confirmed any of the findings that you may have surfaced during your investigation. Now, let's just stop for a minute. We've learned very quickly here the basic method, a five-step method for getting to the truth. But what's the point? The point's not to run around saying, hey, liar, liar, pants on fire. You're lying. Your eyebrow twitched. I know you're lying too. I gotcha. No. Step back for a minute and think about it. The point here is to move from lie spotting to truth seeking and ultimately to trust building because that's what it's all about. When you start to weed out those people that you can't trust from your life, and you start to build a life, both at home and at work, of people around you that you really do trust, where you can be totally honest, you can be truthful, you can be yourself, you can have those difficult conversations during hard times, and really build a fabric of trust around you. When you do that, the entire ground around you starts to shift. And that's really the point of it. That's how your life can really be improved quite significantly, not just by developing the skills of deception detection, but by moving your life forward and developing an entire circle of trust around you. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to be here with you. If you have any questions or you'd like to contact me, you can contact me through my website, liespotting.com. Thank you and best to you.
So thank you so much to Pamela for joining us and sharing the basics of lie spotting. If you joined us a little late, you can get a recap on Twitter by following the hashtag liespotting. And of course, we will be posting a recording as well as a written recap of this on our website in the coming days. Again, our upcoming Office Hours radio shows and teleclasses for the month of August, August 21st, is all about building your financial confidence. August 27th, Balance for the Entrepreneurial Mom with Emma Johnson. And in September, if you're a planner, our office hours are all about networking with colleagues and strangers. And our teleclass is September 25th, The Art of Instant Connection featuring Mel Robbins. So thank you again, everybody, for joining us today. We had a tremendous outpouring of interest in this, and we look forward to having you at one of our upcoming office hour radio shows or teleclasses. And, of course, we look forward to seeing you at the conferences this fall. Thanks so much.